start today. I mean, who gets a cold in the summertime? And this, I mean, not, this is not just, you know, I don't feel good. I mean, this is sad. So anyway, we're going to gut it out today. So, congratulations to Dave. Hadn't seen Dave in a couple weeks. Dave is now engaged. Noise in the background. You hear the crowds cheering and all. Congratulations to him. Hadn't seen him in a couple of weeks. You know, we had, I was at the NAS World Championships, and then we had 4th of July. I hope you enjoyed both those shows. It was, those were fun. And he waited until after I left, the day after I left the last live show until he did that. But congratulations to him. It's, best wishes to both of them. He tells me he's been eating well the last couple of weeks. Let's see. Hot. Hey, you know how we handle heat around this show? Yeah, Chick-fil-A peach milkshakes. Man, those things are good. And you know it's good when you're trying to suck it up through the straw and it's hard to come and you know there's a piece of peach coming through the straw. I mean, that just Chick-fil-A's going to have a run on peach milkshakes this afternoon. But anyway, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. My name is Roger Metz. I'll bear with me as we get through this next hour. Got some good stuff. We're going to be talking well, actually, I went to the mailbox on my way out, and my South Carolina Wildlife is here, and it's got the annual calendar in it. We're going to talk a little bit about the magazine. I talked to Joey Frazier. He's going to come on later on, but this is the magazine to have and the issue to have right here. Brian Frazier from DNR is going to come on after the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk sharks. And back in 2014, we started a tiger shark tagging program down in Port Royal Sound. I think it's done very well. They've done this in conjunction with OSearch. So talk a little bit about history. It actually, one of these tagging programs actually goes back to 1998. So, you know, this hasn't been new in South Carolina, but it's expanded. And he actually had a chance to go down to Jacksonville, South Carolina with OSearch as they tagged some white sharks off Jacksonville a couple months ago. And it looks like there's a move afoot to try to get OSearch to come to South Carolina, bring the big blue boat. So we'll keep track on that one. It's going to be a good talk, I promise you. And then next week, just so you can go ahead and get it on your calendar, we're going to talk to Steve Ranella, Meat Eater TV. Met Steve last May, Louisville, Kentucky, the National Deer Alliance Quality Deer Management Association conventions. Talked to him a little bit. There's an issue out west, not so much here. We don't hear about it here. But, you know, we have 640 million acres of public land in the U.S. It's held in the federal level, and there's a move by some of the western states especially to get the control of that land and all. So that's next Saturday. Going to be a great show. Steve, you need to check him out. Go listen to some of his podcasts, watch his TV shows. He's quite the man's man, I'll tell you that. I really enjoy him. But we're going to start off a little bit. I do have a few things for the calendar, just in case you're looking for something to get out and do. I know it's hot. Best advice I can give you is stay hydrated and do things early and late. We had an archery shoot down at Belfast WMA. A 3D shoot yesterday morning, and boy, I tell you, by 10 o'clock, it was steaming down there. But had a good time. Kids had a good time. DNR did a great job. We'll talk a little bit because that brings on a whole new subject, both with the archery and with the Belfast WMA. But we'll get to that, too, if we have time. If not, we'll just carry it over like we do every other show. But in case you're looking to get out and do something across the state, then here's some things for the calendar events. Loggerhead sea turtles, Edisto Island, that cursor is fast today. Now through the end of July, from 9 p.m. to 11 o'clock, every week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday nights, you can go walk the beach at Edisto Beach State Park and look for loggerhead sea turtles. Now, I don't know, I think they're already nested, and now we're just kind of waiting to see the little ones come out and make their way to the beach, but make their way back to the ocean. But it's a 45-minute presentation, and then you're going on a guided nighttime beach walk. It's about 3 miles. Of course, that's easy walking on a beach for a chance to see a nesting loggerhead sea turtle. So if you're down that way, now through the end of July. Loggerhead Sea Turtle Watch at Edisto Beach State Park. And you can find more information on that at the South Carolina State Parks website. Well, this next one just makes my muscles hurt already. Sunset Stand-Up Paddleboard Marsh Paddle. This is down at Charleston County Parks. That's where you can find more information. But it happens out at the Palmetto Islands County Park in Mount Pleasant. Cruise at Sunday, July the 17th. Cruise our rivers and marshes and see the Lowcountry from a completely new perspective. It's a beautiful night for a paddle. Enjoy the sunset on one horizon and the full moon rising on the other. So glide through the marsh. 16 and up. There's some cost available, cost associated. You need to register for the course. You can find out more at the Charleston County Parks website on this one. And I promise you, a salt marsh, especially at low tide, is one of the best places in the world to be. My wife is sitting at home going, yeah, and your nose is strangely out of whack. But I do. I love a salt marsh. July the 23rd, it's the South Carolina Wildlife Federation's annual Wild Game Supper. It's at Seawalls Catering, 1125 Rosewood Drive in Columbia. You can get tickets online. You got wild game, wild items, and wild times. To a crowd of over 300 people, be auctioning off just about everything anyone could ever want. Jewelry, guided birding, wildlife watching trips, hunting and fishing excursions, both in the southeast and all over, guided river and kayak tours, hunting and fishing equipment, and much more. It's a wild game feast. The South Carolina Wildlife Federation is a nonprofit organization. And this one night produces 15 to 20% of their operating budget for the year. So it starts at 6 o'clock. Registration, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction begins. I did that right. 7:30, the wild game feast begins. 8 p.m., the live auction begins. Card cut, prize drawings, you know, all that stuff. Venison, quail, duck, alligator, catfish, shrimp, and much more. Business casual, tickets $75 a piece. You can go to the South Carolina Wildlife Federation's website and get more information and order tickets right off the website. The 23rd annual PD Deer Classic. Now, everybody knows about the South Carolina Sportsman's, the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. This one kind of hangs back in the shadows. It's most of the time it's in August. I think they moved it up into July. It's July the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th at the Florence Civic Center. Florence is kind of out there on the eastern edge of South Carolina. 65,000 square feet filled with deer hunting products, camo, tree stands, archery, guns, truck accessories, outfitters, knives, taxidermy, and much more. A few of the things that are going to be there this year, Snake Master Steve Scruggs of Let's Get Wild Outdoor Program will join the Deer Classic for his 23rd consecutive year. And the final year, he's going to retire. So that would be a reason to go. Bob Redfern's going to be there. Bob Redfern's Outdoor Magazine will be there. It's about like fishing, hunting, and other outdoor adventures from the novice to the pro, sponsored by Carolina Chevy Dealers. Let me tell you what, Chevrolet is a great corporate sponsor. They don't sponsor this show, but they sponsor my media organization. And in support of us, when I need, like when I went to Texas to the Toyota Bass Classic, they have a fleet of trucks at several places across the U.S. And I just call them and say, I'm flying into DFW, going to Bass Fishing Tournament, and they fix me up with a truck. So they're a great Chevrolet, you know, besides being one of the catalysts for starting this show with that video of the Silverado and Convert, have been a great. So if if you're in the market for a new truck, look at a Chevrolet. Last time I had a diesel Colorado, which was pretty cool. It clicked a little bit, but boy, I tell you, there was that truck had plenty of power. Back to this one. Carolina born and raised David Grant, the PD Cowboy of Horse Tales, will be here. He's the only equine television show that is dedicated to the people who own, ride, and love all things horses. He'll be there this year. Backed by popular demand, the Lowcountry Bush Hookers Catfish Competition. And also meet and greet Taylor Wright, falconer and start of Taylor Wright's Wild Child Adventures. Meet his falcon too. You can find more information at the Florence Civic Center. Florence, go to the pddeerclassic.com for more information. I got a couple more. We'll be back on the other side, finish out the calendar, and then I just got a hodgepodge of stuff we'll go through before we get to Brian Fraser and Sharks at the bottom of the hour. Clark Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Survived the first segment. I do. I hate feeling bad. I hate feeling bad. Ow. In fact, I get upset when I get feeling bad. Too much to do to feel bad. Real quick, August the 5th, this is the Outdoor Dream Foundation. You may know that Hank Parker is one of their big sponsors. Hank lives over in Union, South Carolina now. But August the 5th, the Brandon Broughty 4th Annual Memorial Celebration. This is their banquet for the year, so to speak. This year they're going to have Josh Carney, son of the South, avid outdoorsman and motivational speaker. I don't know if he's paralyzed or what, but he's confined to a chair, or actually he has this, really cool, tracked vehicle that he rides in. I met him up at the Archery Trade Association in January, and he's going to be here this year. They are looking for sponsors. I've talked to several people who said they need sponsors. So if you're interested in sponsoring this event, it's a good cause, because the Outdoor Dream Foundation, you know, they take kids, usually terminal or make-a-wish type kids, hunting and fishing, and kind of fulfill their dreams. If you're interested, you need to call Harold Jones, 864-226-8775. If you want tickets, they're $25 a piece. You can call the same number. But I know they were looking for some sponsors to help out. It's a nonprofit organization. Like I said, provide hunting and fishing and other outdoor adventures to children who have diagnosed with terminal life-threatening illnesses ages 5 through 21. It's going to be the Anderson Sports and Entertainment Center. So it's going to be a good time. Unfortunately, that week I will be at the FLW Cup in Huntsville, Alabama. So, last thing on the calendar for this week, Palmetto Backcountry Campout. This is at Jones Gap State Park, August the 6th and the 7th. If you want to come out and play, this is the place to do it. It's a campout is designed to introduce families or individuals to the backcountry camping experience. Campout will include a 0.4-mile hike with camping gear to the campsite, and then a day hike to beautiful waterfalls inside the Mountain Bridge Wilderness area. Other activities include family camping games, fishing, storytelling, and backcountry cooking. Showers and restroom facilities are within 0.4-mile back down the mountain from the campsite. If you don't have backcountry camping gear, we'll have some available. All participants will be provided with a list of items they need to bring 1 week prior to the campout. Space is limited. So if you're interested in doing this, you need to call 864-836-6155. You can find that contact information plus others at the South Carolina State Parks website. Like I said earlier, we went to Belfast WMA down in Kennard, South Carolina yesterday morning to a kind of an extension of the National Archery and School Program. I have a daughter that shoots that program with the Upstate Hurricanes. It's a great activity for kids. Hands down, just a great activity for kids. But they're kind of branching out. The archery and school program itself is a 10 and a 15 meter shoot at, you know, your regulation square target with your rings and all your 10 ring, 9, 8, 7, like that. They're branching out. And in fact, I guess it's been both years we've been to the national competitions up in Louisville. And then at Worlds, they had a separate 3D shoot, at Sockestee High School. And so yesterday morning was an invitational from the Department of Natural Resources. They put on, and let me get man, you just can't say enough about how well the Department of Natural Resources manages this program. Kim Leverich, Ryan Bass, Henry Barnett. I mean, the same DNR people you see at one, you see at all, and they have it down. They know how to do it. So, you know, you got to give a shout out to those guys. They can put on a smooth tournament. But anyway, they had a 3D shoot down there at Belfast yesterday morning for archers who are participating in the archery and school programs, but may not necessarily have shot 3D. Now, when you say 3D, what we're talking about is, you know, they have a turkey target, a coyote target, a pig target, a antelope whitetail, and a sheep target. And it's a little bit different. These kids are used to shooting the square targets with round rings, and now you have a vital area on a target from the size of a turkey all the way to a sheep. Now, the target area is the same. It's the IB 3D arm of NASP. They wanted to make the target area the same size, but you're changing up the aim points because now no longer can you aim between the 6 and 7 ring and expect to drop them into the 9 and 10 ring all the time. Now on the turkeys with the bows, I'm sure some of those kids were aiming over the back waiting for the fall. Now the turkeys were 10 yards, but every target was a yard deeper. So you had 10, the coyote was 11, 12, on back like that. And it was fun. I actually picked up a bow and shot a few times. Clay and I were shooting, and we decided that we were giving them a fair chance to run before we actually stuck them. But it was a great time. And looking back, and I know I say this a lot about the NASP program, it's, I'm sitting here looking at the winners. They awarded, first place boy and girls in the elementary, middle school, and high school. And it's 3 and 3. They got 3 boys up here and 3 girls up here. So it's a program. And like I said, you had some kids that were probably 10, 11 years old, 12 years old, maybe all the way up to, high school graduates. So what DNR is trying to do, they instituted the NASP program. They're trying to expand to the 3D target side of NASP. And then through that, they're now going to try, or are talking about trying to expand that into actually archery hunts on some of the wildlife management areas. Speaking of wildlife management areas, we were there with some friends from archery, and Emily Cope was there, and she actually gave us a tour of the house, which is right on Highway 56 as you're headed south out of Clinton. And she was instrumental. I played a big part in getting this when she was on the land acquisition side of DNR. Now she's executive director or whatever. And, it's 4,664 contiguous acres. This is one chunk, which is almost unheard of in South Carolina for a wildlife management area. But she gave a speech and kind of tour and a lot of the history and all. And we were with a group of friends who, they were just blown away that there were these lands out there that you could go and it was free to go walk and hike. And, they have a shooting range down there and have a walking archery course set up down there. They have a tower you can shoot off like you're up in a tree stand at a 30-yard target. I mean, and I guess for me, I just kind of take that for granted. WMAs have always been out there. I rarely deer hunted them. I've quail hunted some. I've fished on some, duck hunted on some, but rarely ever deer hunt, which is what most people do most of. But these friends, they weren't hunters. They didn't know that anybody could go use these things. Then we kind of caution time of the year you go visit. You don't want to drop in there where somebody's deer season full blown. But, we walked up and stood on the top of the archery platform. Yellow finches, red-headed woodpeckers. Could hear some quail whistling in the background, which was the best part of the whole day for me almost, other than seeing my daughter shoot and have fun with her friends and all. And like I said, DNR is celebrating 75 years. The first property they bought was in 1941, which was the Webb Center. And I don't know. Maybe I don't do a good enough job of information here, but we're going to rectify that. We're going to do a segment on wildlife management areas and all the places you can go. Now, we've done that with Sumter National Forest. We're going to do those state lands, too, because this is just one. This is right here in Lower Newberry County. 4,600. They don't have like what you would call groomed walking trails, but they've got fire breaks, roads. You can hunt it. You can't fish except on a special event permit that they have every once in a while. But it's just a great place to go, and I kind of take those for granted. I'm sorry about that. I wanted to spend a little more time on this. South Carolina Wildlife. The 2016-2017 Sportsman's Calendar and Almanac is out. It's in the July-August issue. And I love it because the third page in starts the calendar. And they know here in South Carolina, we know how to start off a calendar on the right month, which is September. September is when dove season opens. That is the beginning of my year. I'm about three quarters of the way through the year right now, but September starts it off. And you know, German Shorthair people are going to love it because there's a GSP on the front cover. There's a chocolate lab on the September one. You got dad and I don't know if that's his wife or our three or four kids in a dove field, you know, which is, that's what we grew up doing. So great issue to have. It of course has all your holidays. It's got your, you know, it's got your little fish legend here. A clear fish is good. An outlined fish with a little bit of gray in the middle is better. And boy, a fish that's black is the best fishing day. It's got Labor Day, Fall Equinox, National Hunting and Fishing Day, which is coming up September the 24th. You flip over and there's a picture of a guy hiking, backpacking up in the Jocassee Gorges, overlooking the lake. Just a great issue to have. I mean, there's a picture of a quail hunt. A few deer running through the snow. Well, that must have been a special occasion. And I doubt that was in December, but I could be mistaken. It's just, this is the issue you need to, and I talked to Joey Frazier. He's going to come on with us and talk about South Carolina Wildlife, the magazine. And it, you know, it's been around since I was a kid, and it's, they always have good article. In fact, in the back of this one is an article about Britt Myers winning the FLW, I mean, not the FLW, the Bass Elite Series down at Winya Bay. And all the, you know, they had the Winya Bay Heritage Festival going on, lots of pictures. There's, Sal Hemingway, who's the Georgetown County ambassador, really neat guy. I talked to him a little bit, but anyway, just a great resource for South Carolina because this is just about South Carolina. You know, workout on the way, paddleboarding article. Ugh, that just looks painful. Simple Pleasures of Cleaning Guns by Jim Cassida. Article in here. The beachfront that became a forest at Sullivan's Island. So I'd encourage you. You want to support South Carolina Wildlife and get a good magazine in the boot. Go buy, get your subscription to South Carolina Wildlife. Hang on through the bottom of the hour. We got Brian Frazier on sharks coming up after the break. You know, it's summertime and people are headed to the beach. Sharks are always a subject. You have the pictures that show up of a shark in the surf and all. And yeah, that's their home. That's where they live. And today we're privileged to talk to Brian Frazier. He works with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, been doing sharks for a long time. Brian, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thank you for having me.
Very good. It's taken us a while. You spend way too much time out on the water.
This time of year, I'm out there 3 or 4 days a week for sure.
And in a day on the water this time of the year, what are you doing?
You know, we have several different projects that we have ongoing. We have everything from where we'll be on a 16-foot boat in a small little river sampling for young of year, which are baby sharks, and then juvenile sharks. And, you know, that's part of a long-term survey that we have going on, trying to, you know, just keep a check on populations, make sure they're doing okay.
Sure.
You know, we do that. We could be, you know, out in the middle of Port Royal Sound or St. Helena Sound trying to tag tiger sharks, or we could be, you know, 15 or 20 miles offshore, you know, picking up data loggers that are keeping track of some of our sharks, you know.
Wow.
So there's all sorts of things that we could be doing on any given day.
So when someone wants to talk about sharks, you are the person to talk to.
Yeah, for South Carolina, I've got a pretty good handle on things. At least I'd like to think I do.
Okay, good. Well, take just a second. Tell us who you are and what do you do at DNR?
All right. I'm Brian Frazier. I'm a marine biologist and I run our shark programs here at DNR. I've been with DNR since 2000, and I started initially working with shad and sturgeon and eels, but always helped out the shark project. And then I had an opportunity to start working with them full time. And then shortly thereafter, I took over the project and have been doing it since.
Gotcha. Do you know Pam Holbrook?
Pam Corrin?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly do.
And
certainly
Chad?
Do.
Yeah, yep. They've had me down to the St. Stephen's Fish Lift to look at their research and the eel ladders and all that, which is a pretty cool thing in itself.
Yep, it's a lot more complex, and you know, they've got some pretty cool things. You know, we were doing a little more basic stuff back when I first started, but with a lot of the dam relicensing, you know, they've really you know, gone into investigating how to, you know, how to keep our lakes and rivers supplied with those important fish.
Yep. Well, shark tagging, you know, this I guess it really hit front pages in 2014, summer of 2014, when y'all started this Tiger Shark program, but it's actually been going on in South Carolina way before then. Would you take just a moment and tell us about CoSPAN?
Yeah, certainly, certainly. We have two programs. CoSPAN is the one I mentioned a little earlier, where we're in the creeks and rivers sampling sharks, and we're primarily catching smaller sharks in those areas. Those are the areas that are basically using, you know, our rich estuaries that are just full of food. They're using them to grow up in. It's kind of a safe place for them. There's not as many big sharks in there. So they're in there feeding, they're getting big, and then they migrate out. We also have a program that's actually been going on since 1994, which the primary purpose of that was to look at our adult red drum, and those are the big, you know, 40-plus inch right. red drum that are out, and they come in to the mouths of the rivers and the sounds in the fall, late summer, fall, to spawn. So we actually had a program that's been ongoing, you know, where we would long line for those. However, you know, about 60% of what we caught was sharks. So, you know, so it's really been kind of a multi-species survey since its inception. So we've been tagging sharks since 1994 for that. And in that survey, we actually catch the, you know, a little bit of larger sharks, okay. You know, everything. We still catch some of the small guys, but we can also catch up to, you know, 12 or 13 foot sharks in that survey. So we've had both of those ongoing, you know, since 1994 and 1998. And it's allowed us to have, you know, this long-term picture of how our shark populations are doing.
And how are they doing?
You know, it's very species specific. You know, most of them are doing okay. There's a couple species that, you know, that appear that they're having, you know, problems. There was a lot of overfishing of, species like sandbar sharks, that occurred, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. And since then, you know, we've kind of gotten a handle on it, and it seems like all of those species are, increasing. There's a few others that are still having trouble. Hammerhead sharks in particular, scalloped hammerheads and great hammerheads, and dusky sharks. We used to catch in the 90s, we used to catch, you know, 10 or 15 dusky sharks a year, and we hadn't seen a single one since 2005.
Wow.
So that they're still in trouble. There is signs that their population is rebounding, and there also are signs that they may have actually shifted slightly northward. So, you know, there's a couple things that are occurring there, but I've actually gotten a couple reports of large dusky sharks, one in Port Royal Sound, and actually our turtle trawl group actually thinks they caught one last week. So we're starting to see them show back up, and that's a good thing.
So. Now, you know, you brought some right there, reports from, you know, Port Royal Sound. You are actually the contact. If someone catches a tagged shark, you are the guy they need to call to report that tag, aren't they?
That's right. Yep. Yeah, they can call it in to us, and we can not only give them the information of where that shark was initially tagged, you know, and you know, if it's been captured before, things like that. But then we'll send you a pretty nice hat as thanks for turning that in.
Now, when somebody calls in a report like this, do you want them to measure the shark, tell you anything about the girth, or is it just, hey, I caught this shark here on this day?
You know, we'll take what we can get. If you feel comfortable measuring that shark, you know, we're glad to have that information. You know, you don't necessarily need to do that. We don't want to ask anybody to do anything that they're not comfortable doing. We do ask that if at all possible, to keep the tag in the shark. That way we can continue to get information from that shark. You know, we'll take as much information as you can give us. You know, if you can give us specific coordinates of where you are, date, you know, your best guess as to what the shark is, what species, you know, any other information you want to provide, you know, we'll take everything we can get.
I gotcha. Well, Port Royal Sound is kind of the epicenter, at least in South Carolina. Why is it? And I've talked to, Waddell Mariculture Center.
Al Stokes.
Al Stokes. Talked to Al Stokes several times about it. And he says Port Royal is just a great place for shark research. What makes it so good?
You know, it's an incredibly diverse area. You know, it's highly saline. There's not a lot of freshwater input in that area, and it's pristine as well. But if you go fishing in that sound, it's not just sharks. You know, it's everything. There's a lot of tarpon there. There's a lot of cobia, big red drum. You know, there's some species that we don't see anywhere else in South Carolina. There's giant manta rays down there. You'll see those jumping occasionally. You know, we were down there, you know, leatherback turtles are pretty rare.
Yes.
And we were down there fishing one day and we had 8 different leatherback turtles all around us.
My goodness.
Eating. So, pretty impressive place. There's a lot of live bottom in there and there's a diversity of, bottom habitats. You know, you have everything from sand bottom to these live bottom areas to these rocky areas with real high relief. You know, and the sound range is anywhere from 20 or 30 feet deep to 70 feet deep, which is really deep, and that's a natural sound area. So
not a dredge area.
Yeah, not dredged at all. You know, they are doing some beach renourishment down there, removing sand from the other side, but they haven't done any dredging in that sound itself. So, you know, very, very unique area and very pristine as well.
Okay. And which leads to the question, why tiger sharks?
I really got interested in those. You know, we expanded our red drum sampling, you know, back in, I guess it was 2004, we started going down there. And, you know, our gear isn't really meant to catch big sharks. You know, it's 200-pound test monofilament. You know, a big shark can cut right through that. But we kept, you know, we'd occasionally catch these big tiger sharks, and, you know, it would be a stroke of luck when we caught them, you know, but we'd also have all sorts of critters that, you know, came up half, you know, bitten in half, and it really piqued my interest. And, you know, I started doing some research into them, and I really found that there wasn't any areas along the U.S. where they're using these, estuarine type sound areas.
Okay.
So that kind of piqued my interest, but at the same time, you know, there was a charter captain, Chip Michaelov, who was working down there, and, you know, he was really interested in them as well. And, you know, I kind of always had it in my mind, okay, I need to find some money to start working on these things. And Chip was like, well, I need to find somebody to start working on these things. And basically he reached out to OSearch. It was, you know, the time when OSearch, first started getting prominent with their white sharks.
Right.
And he reached out to them and actually they put him in touch with me. You know, we had talked on the phone, but,
sure.
You know, at this point, they put us together and they also gave us the mechanism in terms of, some satellite tags to actually start doing some research. So, you know, it was kind of multiple people being interested in it and then, you know, having this outside group, help, you know, start the work.
And OSearch is a pretty cool organization. They tag all over the world.
Yes, they do. You know, they're an incredible media machine. You know, and they do a really good job. Of help facilitating, you know, science on these very large, animals. You know, they're working with some really great researchers, up and down the East Coast through the Gulf of Mexico, you know, and allowing some research that would not be possible. You know, especially on like these large white sharks. You know, we're still learning daily,
sure.
You know, from sharks that they've tagged 4 years ago.
Right.
Which is pretty incredible. And what's so awesome about it is the public can follow along and learn in real time with scientists. And that's pretty unique. You know, most of the time science isn't that accessible. You know, but, you know, someone can, you know, download the app and follow these sharks in real time and, you know, they're, you know, seeing those pings the same time the scientists are, and that's pretty unique.
It is, and until Mary Lee pings in Charleston Harbor and everybody starts freaking out.
Yeah, that's when I have to get on the horn a little bit and do a little damage control, you know, and say that there is error associated with those pings, and just because it says it's there doesn't mean it's not, you know, 10 miles away.
Sure.
You know, so I think there was one time Mary Lee pinged in a creek up
yes.
the Wando River that
yes.
was about, you know, 40 yards wide. And,
yeah.
and we said, we know for a fact she's not there.
Yeah, that's, I like to trout fish in that creek. And I saw that ping and I was like, No, huh? That's above, yeah, that's above the 526 bridge.
No, you're not putting a 4,000-pound shark in that creek.
Oh boy, but it did make for some good internet chatter for a while.
Yes, it did.
Well, how many tiger sharks have you tagged and are tracking now to Port Royal Sound?
Okay, well, we have two different types of tags we're using.
All right.
We have the spot tag, which is a type of satellite tag, and those are the ones that we've been using in conjunction with OSearch. And we've tagged 11 to date with those. And
okay.
at the same time, they're also tagging some for us in some different areas. When they were doing their Jacksonville white shark expedition, this spring, they tagged 4 down there, and I think they've tagged 3 or 4 now up off of Wilmington. So we've got a fair number, and we're starting to learn more about those sharks outside of the sound systems, and that's something I'm really looking forward to seeing how they move outside of our systems, because
okay.
I've really been focused in our system. But we have another tag type that we use, which is called an acoustic transmitter, and we actually surgically implant that into the shark. So we roll them over and we actually make an incision
okay.
and put the tag inside them, sew them back up. And it's a much greater longevity tag. We can collect data on those sharks for up to 10 years. However, they have to swim by an acoustic receiver, which is basically an underwater hydrophone that
yeah.
detects that tag. So we have 41 of those, 41 tigers now out there with those acoustic transmitters. So we've got a pretty good sample size, and we're starting to learn some pretty cool stuff.
And you've tagged some pretty big ones, too.
We have unfortunately the two largest that we have captured, we weren't able to tag with the spot tags. The longest we've captured was right at 14 feet. However, she was pretty skinny. She wasn't pregnant.
Okay.
If she was pregnant, she would have been massive. And the largest, the heaviest one was probably about 1,500 pounds. Very, very large, pregnant tiger shark. The largest that we tagged with the spot tag was Chessie, and we actually tagged that one with Captain Chip Michaelov, and we were lucky enough to have the donor from the Port Royal Sound Foundation out with us as well, and she was pretty big too. She was probably 1,200 or 1,300 pounds. So
wow, now how old will a tiger be when she gets that big?
At that point, they're probably 30 to 40 years old.
Mm.
So they don't have they're not as old as some species. What we're finding out now is that some of the white sharks can live 70 or 80 years. So they grow a little quicker than some of the other large sharks, which is pretty unique as well.
Well, you got to handle all that. Like I said, this time of the year you get the beach pictures of a fin in the water, and usually you check Snopes and it's, false, because you're seeing one fin wearing a shark that size, you'd see the tail too.
Yep.
What do we have along the beaches of South Carolina as far as species? Why are they there? Of course, they live there, but why would they be in the surf with people and all? And smart steps people can take to keep from having a run-in with one.
Yeah. Well, it's with sharks, it's all about food. With bait fish, it's all about not being eaten. And a great place for them to potentially not be eaten is in the surf. It's a kind of a turbid area, so you'll get a lot of bait that pushes right up against the beach and tries to avoid being eaten. And the sharks know that, so they're in there trying to find that bait that's trying not to be eaten. And unfortunately, that does put them in conflict with people that are using those waters to swim and everything. There could be up to 15 or 16 species that are in the surf. Some of the ones that are you're more likely to see are black tip sharks, and those guys can be responsible for bites. They'll start aggressively feeding when they get a school of menhaden or mullet pushed up on the beach. There's been videos where the sharks are coming completely up on the beach, chasing after mullet and things like that. So those are one of the major ones that are there. There's smaller ones, fine-tooth sharks and black-nosed sharks. And, you know, probably the most common one, definitely the most common, is Atlantic sharp-nosed. And okay. If you've ever been surf fishing, those guys are hard to avoid. You know, they're the little 12-inch sharks, right, that you catch. You know, if you put a drop rig in there, you know, you're going to catch those guys pretty frequently. And they only grow to about 3.5 feet. So okay. If they happen to nip you, it might be a stitch or two, but it's not going to be a problem. A lot of folks actually send me pictures of bonnethead sharks in the surf as well. You know, those guys, they'll feed really shallow.
Yeah.
You'll see them cruising along. And what they're doing is they're just looking for crabs.
Okay.
You know, if those guys were to grab your hand, you know, you'd probably have a few scrapes. You wouldn't even have stitches or anything like that. So, you know, there are, you know, a lot of sharks in the surf. However, they're not there to, you know, to interact with us. Remains pretty rare. You know, you think about how many people were in the water, you know, on any given weekend. You know, we still average about 4 shark bites a year.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's an incredibly rare event. Yeah,
it is. Well, we still got more information to go over, but I'm running out of time, which means we're just going to have to get you back on.
All right. Fair enough.
But I do appreciate you taking time to be here. Stories come out, and if you got something you want to talk about, please give me a call and we'll get you back on, because we do have some more stuff to talk about. But just too much information means you don't get to it all.
Yep, fair enough. I'll give a little teaser. I will say we're working on trying to get the big blue O search boat here,
wow,
you know, to maybe work on tiger sharks or white sharks. You know, I'm sure some of your audience has heard Captain Chip down there, and in Hilton had his, I think he caught 5 white sharks last year on hook and line, and got a couple to the boat. So, you know, we're potentially interested in lining something up and, seeing if we can, you know, get them down here, and, you know, it'd be really great to get a couple white sharks tagged off of South Carolina.
It would. Well, Brian, I thank you for coming on, a wealth of knowledge, and let's do it again.
All right. Thanks, sir.
Yes, sir. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Hope you enjoyed that segment with Brian. He's a neat guy, does some neat work. And if you go to OSearch right now, www.ocearch.org, you can see, let's see, Jax, which is a tiger shark, is just off of McClellanville, maybe just a little north of Bulls Bay. Mary Lee looks like she's about 120 miles east of Savannah. And there's several more that have pinged along the coast. Just a neat thing they're doing with sharks. It is pretty cool. Okay, real quickly, I want to mention, because he's been burning up my phone with texts for the last 15 minutes. My buddy Geddes Brandon, frequent guest here on the show, has written an article for Bassmaster. Will Hardy, if you don't know, he is co-owner of Greenfish Tackle down in Martinez, Georgia, sharing the water with Ike. Will qualified for the Elite Series tournament trail up at Oneida Lake at the Bass Northern Open, number one. And so Geddes wrote an article. It's at the Bassmaster website. It's Will Hardy sharing water with Ike. Good article. Congratulations to Geddes. He's having fun. He's got a project going on now, and oh boy, it might take us a show and a half to get through all the information he's got to talk about. But anyway, check his article out. It's a good one. Congratulations to Will Hardy on making the elites, and we'll probably have him here on the show shortly. Just for your information, June 2016. Saw the most FBI gun background checks of any June since the current system went into effect. 2.1 million related checks in June, an increase of 600,000 over last June, which was a record. That makes June the 14th month in a row to see a new background check record, including every month of 2016. This year is on pace to break 2015's record for most checks in a year. I would love to know. It doesn't give it to you, and there's no way to know. How many of those are first-time buyers? I would love to know that. Or is it just people adding to their collections? Or You know, what is it? Is it ISIS? Is it politics? I hate to even venture into the Dallas thing. Hearts go out to those officers. And I'll just leave it alone. I don't want to go any further than that. But anyway, it's pretty astounding. I mean, you're talking 25.2 million guns if 2.1 is the average this year. That's a lot of gun sales in 1 year. But you have that in years like this one. Real quick, and I want to give you an assignment before next week's show. I want you to go to sportsmensaccess.org. It's sportsmensaccess.org. That is a website that you can get a lot of information about public lands, about what's happening out west. You can also go to the Theodore Roosevelt, TRCP, Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. Do some research. I want you to, when we talk to Steve next week, I want you to have some information on history of public lands and the challenges that are facing them right now. It, I promise you, next week's going to be a good week. You'll enjoy it. And for those of you, I'm talking to me as much as anybody else. Do preseason deer work now. I was out there over the 4th of July Saturday. It was 90-something degrees. And when Anthony Gagliardi called me on his way home from New York, I was happy to take a break. I told him, I said, there's no deer that's worth this. But do it now. You know, limb removal, move tree stands. Plan how you're going to get in and out of tree stands during the season. You know, just a lot of work to do. But I want to leave you, if I have time, and maybe, maybe not. Theodore Roosevelt. Conservation means development as much as it does protection. I recognize the right and duty of this generation, and I'm not going to get through with this. Shoot. A great quote. I'll do it next week. Hey, hope you have a great week. Make time to get outdoors. Take the back roads when you can, especially across the state of South Carolina. Don't forget that camera. I'll see you back here next Saturday.